Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi. And welcome to another episode of Lob Podcast from These Football Times. My name's Gary Thacker, and we're back with another episode of Series 2 of Mount Rushmore. This is the series where we ask invited guests to select their four players, one goalkeeper, one defender, one midfielder, and one forward, who they believe deserve to be immortalised on their club's very own Mount Rushmore monument. It's not necessarily about the best players, the longest serving, or top goal scorers. It's for each guest to choose the players that they feel are the most deserving. Before we introduce this episode's guest and ask him to tell us a little bit about himself and his club, we need to introduce the two co-hosts. So, how are we doing, Stevie? Steve, it's Greg. How are you doing, buddy?
Yes, all good. Looking forward to this. I think it's a club that not many will have expected us to cover, but it's well within the spirit of previous episodes and massively looking forward to this. It's a club I've been lucky enough to visit. I went for a pre-season friendly a few years back, and I can always remember them being on my radar for a particular season in the mid 1980s when they were on a big mad chase for to hit the 100-point barrier, and I think they gained a lot of notoriety over that. So they're a club that's, I don't know, they hit the sweet spot for me in that 1980s vibe that I always like.
Yeah. I think they had a few high points in their history, and I'm sure we'll sort of put in them as we go along. And our other co-host is Aidan Williamson. Aidan, how you doing, buddy? Looking forward to this one.
Evening, Gary. Yeah, absolutely, very much. As Steve says, it's nice to get into the clubs that we wouldn't necessarily think of to go to, and that's where it's great to get outside experts in to go to talk about how passionately they think about certain names from their club's past. And this is one where, you scratch beneath the surface and there are some real high points in the past of this club. And Stephen's talking about the 80s. I remember, obviously, early 90s as well. This club rose up, got denied, rose up again. And it's all quite interesting stuff when you delve into it. So, yeah, looking forward to this one very much.
Yeah, I remember a guy when your team and the team we're going to talk about tonight was sort of competing for promotion, and they were sort of going at hammer and tongs in a ridiculous game where there was lots of goals. It was something like 5-3, I think it ended, or something like that.
Oh, could well have done. I mean, there's this season where, a playoff semi-final against our closest rivals didn't go too well for us, and then Swindon, they saw them off in the playoff, but it all went a bit wrong from there. But I'm sure we'll get into some of that.
Indeed. So today's guest is Vic Morgan, and we're going to be talking about Swindon Town. Vic's followed Swindon Town for over 50 years and goes to games home and away and regularly watches about 50 Swindon games a season. That's pretty impressive. For many years, he worked as Swindon reporter for local radio stations and commentated on games for some many great Swindon moments, including three Wembley finals. And he regularly now presents the official Supporters Club Monday night panel, where they discuss all things Swindon Town online. And he also hosts events with former Swindon players. So, welcome on board, Vic Morgan.
Thank you very much. I'm really pleased to be here. Apologies for the hay fever. So, there's a little bit of sniffling going on, but that's because of the yellow stuff they grow in fields these days. It causes me all sorts of problems. So, apologies for that straight away.
No worries, Vic. So, tell us a little bit about yourself, a bit more than I covered in the intro, and why Swindon Town?
Pretty simply, I was born there. I now live in Devon, but that hasn't stopped me being stupid enough to travel up and down the country sideways and backwards to watch them every weekend. I retired 6 years ago, so I've got plenty of time to do that now. And we've had an extraordinary season where, you may well remember, back in July, we had a total of 7 players. We had no owner, no money, nothing. And suddenly an Australian came in and bought us, Clem Morfuni, and he's revitalised the club, so much so that for the last home game, last regular home game of the season yesterday, we had 13,500 for a game against Barrow. I mean, I don't know about you, but that seems an extraordinary figure. And we're still in with a shout of the playoffs. So that's the drug that keeps us going, isn't it? Those moments, those magical moments.
It definitely is. And we're talking on air before we came on air, I should say. I come from Walsall, the West Midlands, and Vic mentioned the big game coming up against between Walsall and Swindon, with the playoffs sort of very much in the balance. And, you know, as he mentions, to be in a situation that they are now, considering where they were when they had seven players and no owner, is a massive achievement, Vic.
It's extraordinary. And we're going to take 4,000 fans to Walsall. Okay, it's not the furthest of games, but 4,000 to an end-of-season game at Walsall is a pretty extraordinary figure. So much so, I think, that Walsall are having to give us more and more tickets as the day goes by. So, tremendous backing. Swindon have it in their own hands. They need to win to get in those dreaded playoffs with the possibility of return to League One, which is really what we desperately want to get out of League Two. We've had enough of that.
I'm sure a lot of clubs would agree with that, matey. Before we sort of look at your first choice of the goalkeeper, tell us who came close.
There are sort of three or four which are really in the top echelon of Swindon Town's history. Second to my choice is Jimmy Allen, who was an extraordinary goalkeeper. We recently hosted him in the Legends Lounge at the County Ground and had four of our greats together in one night. It was a magnificent evening. Now, Jimmy was unique, really, in as much as he was the first footballer to not play on a Sunday because of his religious beliefs. And he also was part of the League Cup semi-final team that got knocked out by Wolves way back in 1980. So a great goalkeeper, Jimmy Allen. He would have come very close. Also coming very close would be Fraser Digby, who was with the club in the fourth division and then rose up through the ranks. A Manchester United goalkeeper, still a legend in the town, still a lovely chap. And he would have been in there too. And also currently playing, Wes Fodringham, who plays for Sheffield United at the moment. He went from Swindon to Rangers, but notable, of course, for his time at Swindon under Paolo Di Canio when they won the fourth division championship a couple of years ago, or 10 years ago, extraordinarily enough, this week, which seems amazing. Fraser Digby, I mentioned Fraser, what a goalkeeper he was, and extraordinary times at Swindon we've seen over the years. So they would be the sort of four that you would, the three and my choice that you would bracket together as my top goalkeepers.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered a few, how should we say, less celebrated clubs over the series that we've done on Mount Rushmore. It's always fascinating to hear about some players that become more famous with shall we say, more celebrated clubs. As their career progresses, so it's great to hear, you know, that they're still well-regarded, the club where they started off. So tell us, who's your first choice then, Vic, for goalkeeper?
Well, I would say to any football fan, we were talking before we started about the 1969 League Cup final. And in goal for Swindon that day was somebody called Peter Downsborough. Now, this was the days when goalkeepers didn't have specialist gloves. They had woolen gloves and no real protection at all. But there was a 15-minute spell in that League Cup final, which to me is the greatest goalkeeping display I've ever seen. And if you ever want to see something which is quite extraordinary, watch that as Downsborough defies corner after corner after corner to keep Swindon in the game. Peter Downsborough joined from Halifax. He was well noted as a pigeon fancier, which is not what you expect for a footballer, but a tremendous goalkeeper and right out of the old school. Sadly, no longer with us, but still a legend in the town. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Stevie, coming to you first. Goalkeepers are always such a key element of any successful team. And, you know, Vic mentions about the League Cup final victory over Arsenal. I remember that fantastic game so well. Peter Downsborough, thoughts?
Yeah, I've seen this performance. You know, one of those where you fall down numerous YouTube rabbit holes. And I knew of the result. I knew of the significance of it all. I remember seeing the goals on way back, must have been, early 90s, I suppose. They did this retrospective of kind of like the first 30 League Cup finals, and they showed all the goals on ITV before one of the finals one year. And I remember being transfixed by this Swindon victory and the state of the pitch as well. And this wonderful goalkeeping performance, where it was just the proper stereotypical through the kitchen sink, and then via online purposes you can find greater extent of the highlights of that game now, and it is well worth looking up. And I you know, despite the longevity of Fraser Digby, I can fully understand why he's gone for Peter Downsbury. My Vic's gone for him.
Yeah, fair comment. I remember that game so well. You mentioned the start of the pitch was an absolute mudbath, and Arsenal obviously were a first division team at the time, and Swindon were in the third division, and they came under a lot of pressure, as Vic said, and Peter Downsbury sort of was the sort of solid rock in front of the goal that kept Swindon in the game.
What's fascinating about that as well is that, yeah, at the time they weren't. I don't know, they were an Arsenal side that were underachieving as such. They'd lost the League Cup final the year before against Leeds. But this is an Arsenal team that are 2 years away from winning the double. You know, this is an Arsenal team that win the Intercity's first cup a year later. You know, this is one of the League Cup's greatest moments, and Peter Downsbury was at the heart of it.
Yeah, you mentioned the pitch, and of course it's often thought it was the Horse of the Year show that caused problems with the pitch. Well, it did, but the week before, many people forget that England beat France 5-0 and it rained incessantly. And so they didn't have a chance to really get the pitch sorted out. And to be honest, if you went to Weston-super-Mare and played football on there, it probably would have been a better surface. I mean, it was just extraordinary. And we'll get onto forwards a little later, and we're going to mention a name, I'm sure. But you will know that name, if you watch him in that performance, is almost pristine white for 120 minutes. I mean, it's just... That's the sort of player he was. But what a day. And I remember it well. I went up with the school from Malmesbury, and there was no M4 in those days. It was just kind of back roads and a little bit of the M4. But a lifetime of memories. Somebody wrote in the Sunday Express, never has so many lifetime memories been bought for so cheap. And it was like 10 shillings a ticket. And, you know, what a 10 shillings. Never a better 10 shillings spent, I can tell you.
Aidan, a 10 bob now to go and watch your team, a third tier team, to go and turn over a club that would be double champions 2 years down the road and win a trophy at Wembley. Peter Downsbury, what a hero that day, mate.
It's quite something, isn't it? I mean, you just can you even contemplate such a thing happening in the modern times of a third division team? Like Swindon got promoted from the third division that year, I think. So, you know, they were obviously in fine form, but this, as you say, Arsenal were maybe not at their peak, but they were on their way to it, building to it. They still finished fourth in the top flight this year. So, you know, this wasn't some team struggling at the foot of the top flight who were, you know, down on confidence or anything like that. It's absolutely remarkable. I mean, a couple of the comments on Downsbury that I've read. Bob Wilson, obviously the Arsenal goalkeeper, described his performance as unbelievable, the sheer amount of saves and the quality of them that he had to make. In the Times, his performance was, well, the game itself, sorry, was described as, for a quarter of an hour, it was Downsbury versus Arsenal, and Downsbury won. And there you go. And you know, this is clearly the highest peak in Swindon Town's history, I would warrant. And, you know, it doesn't get better than this. And to be the hero of that performance, well, how could he not be on your Mount Rushmore? I think you should have him double size, Gary. I think his significance to Swindon Town and their greatest achievement can't be understated. You couldn't have picked anyone else. Fraser Digby was the one that springs to mind before I knew too much about Peter Downsbury, having looked into it for this. Because obviously, you know, that was slightly before my time and I didn't know too much about that. But clearly, this is the right choice.
Yeah, I absolutely understand. Now, just going back to Fraser Digby, Vic, I mean, obviously, this is a guy who sort of moved on and progressed, but is it important that Downsbury was a Swindon guy throughout rather than somebody who sort of moved on further to progress his career with other clubs?
Peter Downsbury, he did move on eventually, of course, but he also came back, I think it was with Bradford City, and put in a magnificent performance at the County Ground to keep Bradford in it and get them a 1-0 victory. But even so, he was applauded off the pitch at the end, rightly so. I mean, it was extraordinary. And as you've mentioned, it was the peak of their powers, really. And they narrowly missed out the following season from promotion to the First Division. I think they finished fourth in the old Division Two and narrowly missed out. And they had a bedrocket of offence. Rod Thomas, the Welsh fullback. They had Butler, Burrows and Haaland in the middle, two dominating centre-halves. and John Trollope, of course, who holds the record for the most appearances for one club. So extraordinary defence. And Peter Downsborough was at the back. And I think if you asked a defender what gives you the greatest confidence, they'll say the goalkeeper. And, you know, you can't really say more than that.
Well, OK, it seems that it's pretty sort of unanimous verdict that Peter Downsborough is going to be the first name on Swindon Town's Mount Rushmore. So I'll get my hammer and chisel out and we'll set that up in a second. But before we do that, let's talk about defenders. So before we name your choice, who was close? Who came second? Who came third? And
oh, goodness. Well, I've just mentioned four of them. They all came close, of course. I'm going to mention one name that you probably have never heard of, but he was my favourite Swindon player of all time. And for reasons I just cannot understand, but that's the way it is. His name's Will Dixon. He doesn't make it into this choice, but he was just great. He had a fantastic 70s Zapata moustache and he was just a 100% footballer. And, you know, I really loved him. And, you know, it's one of those times when you're stood on the terraces and, you know, he's one of these players that you'd go, oh, well done, Will. Oh, flipping heck, Dixon. You know, he's one of those players, but you just loved him. And the crowds loved him so much, and they were so upset that when he was released by the club, they bought him a crystal set of a decanter and glasses. He was so popular. So there you go. He'd have to be close. But those four as a unit, I would say, would be near. And Sean Taylor, another dominating centre-half, would definitely be up there. He would literally head a brick wall for you, and he would beat the brick wall. It would be as simple as that. He lives not far from me in Devon, actually. And, you know, I've spoken to him a few times since. Lovely man, just a wonderful footballer and one of the great dominating centre-halves of all time.
Yeah, you mentioned another player who holds a record of appearances for the
club. John Trollope, yeah.
Trollope. And also you had players like Paul Bowden, Chris Ramsey. So your choice must have been pretty exceptional to qualify ahead of a guy who's played so many games, and then these sort of players who obviously went on to further their careers afterwards.
Yeah, it was a choice between John Trollope and the one I'm going to name in a moment, because John is still very much a part of Swindon Town. I see him quite regularly every week at the ground. Lovely man, and as humble as they come. And, you know, a record breaker for Swindon Town. Never a more loyal player has there been in football, I don't think. And he just loved playing for Swindon. And he was the epitome of the modern wingback. You know, he would get forward and combine with the man in front of him, whose name we'll mention a little later. And in fact, their combination brought about the first goal against Liverpool in a League Cup tie a few years after that League Cup final success, which they beat Liverpool, Bill Shankly's Liverpool 2-0, which is an extraordinary result at the county ground. So, you know, wonderful footballer. So John Trollope would certainly be up there.
Yeah. Well, we'll ask Stevie for his comments on that game a little bit later. But so who's your choice then, Vic, for a defender?
Well, his name is Colin Calderwood, and I've chosen him because he captained Swindon from the fourth division right the way through to the Premier League, although sadly didn't play in the Premier League for Swindon. He was transferred in that summer to Tottenham Hotspur. So he moved after the Wembley final against Leicester City, in which they beat Leicester 4-3, an extraordinary game. But Colin Calderwood joined from Mansfield, I think it was £32,500, and he led Swindon to the points total that Steve was mentioned earlier, the 102 points in 85-86. He's known as the Fridge, just calm, cool, hard, but a wonderful footballer too. He was a combination of everything. So Colin Calderwood, who was captain amazing, would definitely be on Mount Rushmore, I would think.
Okay, you make a compelling case. Aidan, coming to you first on this one. Colin Calderwood, there's lots of other players that Vic's mentioned there, players who played more games for the club, but sometimes a player stands out, especially as a skipper in a successful team.
And he's not just a skipper. He was made skipper at the age of 21 when joining Swindon Town. Now, that tells you an awful lot, I think, about him as a character, not just his playing ability, you know, leading by example, but, you know, his character, the drive he would bring, his attitude, and so on, you know. That takes a bit of gumption to be able to take over as a captain at that kind of age, presumably in amongst a whole load of grizzled professionals that he'd have to lead. So that says an awful lot, I think. And it's the sort of narrative of coming from the bottom tier all the way up to the top. And as Vic says, I guess it's a shame, a big shame for Swindon Town fans that he never got to play for them in the top flight. Whereas I guess people like Paul Bowden, who's probably another well-known defender from that time, did get to. But I think, again, and we've talked on this on some of the other pods about, and you mentioned it earlier, Gary, players who've come through, or in this case, joined at a very young age, a club that's sort of rising up or is a bit lower down, and then moving on to bigger things when the time comes. Now, oh, sure, it ended up as a transfer between two Premier League clubs, I guess, at this stage, but Swindon to Tottenham, I think even the hardest Swindon Town fan wouldn't deny was a step up in your career path. There's a pride in that still, as we've talked about, isn't there? You know, that shows what this club has nurtured in a player like him. And obviously he went on to become a regular for Scotland, played at the Euros, played at the World Cup. But he had his grounding coming through all the lower leagues with Swindon Town and all the way to the top. You know, he got himself promoted to the Premier League with them twice, but he only got to fully achieve it once. You know, that says an awful lot about him. I think, you know, we calm and composed on the ball, things like that, absolutely. But, you know, good and tough as well, as you'd expect from a good Scottish centre-half, I think. And he went on to great things, of course. He went on to great things. But a huge pride, I think, for Swindon in that a lot of that was achieved developed for them, sorry, rather than achieved and brought through from the lower reaches. I think there's that sort of, maybe loyalty isn't quite the right word in this case, but it's sort of, you've been there through the good and the sort of lower, you know, you've been through the lot with the club. And that develops a connection, that develops a bond. Fans love players who've been with them on the journey. Yeah, that's probably the better way of looking at it. You know, it's the journey that he's been on with the club all the way from fourth tier to the top. You get a huge bond that way. And being the club captain at such a young age just adds to that.
It certainly does. Stevie, I mean, you've got experience of a young player coming through who looks destined to be captain of your club. I'm thinking, obviously, Stevie Gerrard coming through. And sometimes these players make an immediate impression and sort of create that aura about them. And obviously, Calderwood was a similar sort of situation. That was Swindon Town.
Yeah, some players are just, I don't know, always like experienced and wise beyond their age. You know, I can remember the story of Gary Gillespie, captain in Falkirk at 17. Barry Venison was quite a young captain at Sunderland. I think he was Sunderland's captain in the 85 League Cup final at a relatively young age. You know, but some players just have that aura and they have that composure that it doesn't matter how young they are. And it's almost like you'd always expect kind of like older pros to resent this, but you never kind of hear stories of it in these instances. You never hear a bad word said about a player who comes through to be such a dominant figure at a young age. You know, it's almost as if kind of like certainly supporters will the man, you know, and hopefully it's the teammates that do as well. You know, Colin Calderwood, you know, ticks this box, you know, part of an incredible team. You know, we had that team that hit 102 points in 85, 86, you know, promotion the second successive season the following year, and then knocking on the door of the first division. You know, it goes forgotten that they reached the playoffs 3 years running. It wasn't just that, you know, 89, 90 season when they were denied promotion. They knock on the door the two previous seasons and, you know, and Colin Calderwood was the leader of that side. You know, it was an incredible era for them.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier, Vic, about how some players come to lesser, slightly brighter clubs and then move on to bigger clubs, shall we say. And obviously Calderwood moved on to Tottenham. Was there sort of, I mean, in some situations like that, I mean, I come from Warsaw, so I mean, I've seen players in similar situations. Sometimes there seems to be a resentment about players leaving. And at other times, people understand and sort of say, okay, thanks for all your loyalty and we understand why you're doing it. So how is it, which one of those two did Colin Calderwood fit into?
I think there was a bit of disappointment because obviously we'd have loved to have seen him play in the Premier League with Swindon. There's no question about it. But the man who bought him was Ozzy Ardiles, of course, who'd previously been our manager. So he knew Colin Calderwood well and was manager of that side that didn't get promoted in 1990. So, you know, he knew Colin well, and he went on to have a great career and played in the World Cup, the French World Cup. It was hard to believe, really. You were watching Scotland against Brazil in the opener in the Stade de France, and Colin Calderwood was playing centre-half for Scotland in that game. It was quite extraordinary, really, to think you'd seen him in the fourth division against Rochdale for Swindon. You know, it's just amazing. So, you know, I think even now, I remember we went to Cambridge a couple of years ago, and he was manager of Cambridge on those days, on that day, and he got a standing ovation from the Swindon fans. So, you know, hey, you can't hold anything against the man who's led you to the top, really. Just a great footballer and a really nice bloke as well, because I had a lot of dealings with him, and a very humble man. You know, he you wouldn't have thought he was a top footballer. He was just a nice man to talk to. So, you know, unquestionably one of Swindon's greats. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, we sort of referred to Swindon sort of reaching the top two a few times and then having to fall and falling back down again and coming again sometimes. But I guess it's difficult for clubs to break into that. I mean, we see teams like Watford and Norwich get promoted, relegated, even in Premier League times. I mean, it must be difficult, I guess, when players have come through the leagues with a club and then they leave, and almost it seems like it's almost sort of dooming the club to a struggling season.
Yeah, it's a shame, because it's often said that that side that went up in 1990, and by the way, the man who scored the goal, Alan McLaughlin, it's 1 year since he passed away. So a great footballer for both Swindon Town and the Republic of Ireland, we should say. So, you know, we mark his passing on Wednesday at the end of season awards, actually. But he, you know, and the rest of his squad, I think if you look at that team in 1990 in the old First Division, they would have held their own. They wouldn't necessarily have, you know, finished top 10 or anything daft, but they would have held their own. But of course, then the Premier League is introduced, and all the money that goes with it. When Swindon went up to the Premier League, there wasn't the money about, and there certainly weren't parachute payments and things like that. So, yeah, they got promoted at the wrong time, if there is a wrong time to get promoted to the Premier League. I don't know.
Indeed. Hey, okay, so we're happy with Colin Calderwood then. So we're going to move further forward to the midfield players now. I mean, I was doing a little bit of research on Swindon this morning, and my word, there's been some stellar names playing in midfield for Swindon. So, I mean, before you sort of tell us who's your choices, tell us who came close, and because there must be some amazing names that came close.
Well, I mean, Ozzy Ardiles played a midfielder for us for two games, which is quite extraordinary, really. The 1978 World Cup winner plays that got injured, so he didn't have much of a career. Likes of Mickey Hazard, John Moncur, people like that. Extraordinary footballers played for Swindon. And, you know, all the way through the ages, we've seen some of the great midfield players. Chris Kamara played in midfield, of course, for us. You might have heard of him. He played in that fourth division championship campaign. So we've had some great ones. But the one I've gone to is one who's a real favourite for those of a certain age. I think that's pretty much the qualification. If you ask a younger fan than me, he probably wouldn't even get a mention. So, but he was, you know, up there at that particular era.
It's interesting that you mentioned Chris Kamara. When I saw the play, I thought, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, he had two spells with Swindon. And, you know, one under Bobby Smith and then one under Lou Macari. And what a player. I mean, my goodness, so much energy, boundless energy. And to see him go on and make Christmas hit singles, it just seems a bit odd. But good on him. And I know he's recovering from illness at the minute, so we wish him well.
Indeed. Well, one name you haven't mentioned, which I thought you would sort of feature somewhere in the discussion, is Glenn Hoddle.
Oh, well, it's interesting because he played a sweeper for Swindon.
Yes, correct.
So you wouldn't class him as a midfielder for Swindon, would you? It seems incongruous not to have him in there somewhere. If you'd had a section for sweepers, he would have been the number one choice. What a player. I mean, my goodness. I just remember one night at Ipswich, we won 4-1 that night, and I was doing the commentary, and he had the ball by the foot of his own post. Now, most of us, you know, at any level, those of us who played Sunday League would certainly have done what I'm going to describe, but he just got hold of the ball, whacked it as far as we could. But oh no, he doesn't. He plays a forward 60-yard pass into the path of a forward who then goes on to score a goal. And you just think, how on earth did he do that? I mean, monumental footballer. There's no question about it. And, you know, when you think we've had him, we've had Odiar Diles, Lou Macari, the list goes on and on and on. And, you know, wow, what a footballer. I couldn't pick him because he wasn't technically a midfield player.
No, I understand. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know, all those sort of stellar names you just discussed there, and, you know, and plus Glenn Hoddle doesn't sort of slot nicely into this category, but there's still, as you say, some famous names there. So the guy you chose must be some kind of player. Tell us who it is.
His name's Ray McHale, and he was captain of the side that got to the League Cup semi-final in 1980. We were beaten by the Wolves over two legs, and that still hurts, I can tell you. There was a famous incident where Paul Bradshaw, the Wolves goalkeeper, came down and cleaned out Alan Mays, sort of Schumacher-Battiston style, and wasn't sent off. And to this day, it angers all Swindon fans who were there. And indeed, Alan Mays, who we did on the Legends Night with Jimmy Allen at the County Ground recently, it still burns brightly, I can tell you. And every time the Wolves are mentioned, do you remember that incident with Paul Brett? It just goes on and on and on. So, yeah, Ray McHale was a great driving midfield player. He scored 40-odd goals for the town as well, some penalties, of course. But he made over 200 appearances. And these were in the days when, you know, the pitches weren't pristine like they are now. They were complete mud baths. And Ray McHale would just plough through these mud baths and drive his side on. And he was, again, like Colin Calderwood, an inspirational captain. And for those of us who watch that side, the name of Ray McHale stays up there forever. Just a wonderful footballer. He went on to play for Brighton. He managed Scarborough twice as well. I think he now lives in Spain, if I remember rightly. But a wonderful, wonderful footballer. And for me, deserves his place.
Yeah. Stevie, coming to you. I mean, it's interesting. We sort of see this so often in these podcasts, about much more, that sometimes it's not the stellar names that make the cut. It's the guys that sort of are deemed to be the long-serving, the hard-working, the guys who sort of give their all for the club rather than the guys who sort of, you know, played in World Cups, like, you know, Hoddle and Ardiles.
Yeah, I think it is. It's the heartbeat of the team, is it? You know, so sometimes it's that metronomic player who's the all-action hero, or they've pulled off the miraculous, or it's the longevity of a player. It's the commitment, I think, from a midfielder that often strikes at the heart of a football supporter. And it's why that they will, you know, live long in the memory and live long in the heart of a supporter. You know, at Liverpool, we'll still turn around and say that Graeme Souness was the greatest we saw in a Liverpool shirt. Yeah, you know, we had Steven Gerrard a generation later, and it's that superhero of a player that people tend to look for in the midfielder. I totally get where Vic's coming from.
Yeah, you mentioned the word commitment, which is the word I was searching for there, Stevie. So, yeah, well done, buddy. Coming to you, Aidan, a player like Ray McHale, who perhaps isn't as well known, but serves the club so well and becomes, you know, as Stevie said, like a heartbeat of the club. Sometimes these things surpass World Cup players and internationals and players who go on to play in the Premier League or wherever. These are the players that make the difference to these sort of clubs, aren't they?
Totally, yeah. It's about a connection, isn't it? A bond. And reeling off the list of some of those players who played in midfield for Swindon, that's quite a statement, isn't it? And that shows it. That's about how a connection is made. And a lot of the attributes Stephen was talking about there, they're things that, you know, there's a lot of players. Vic was talking there about Glenn Hoddle, him doing things on a field that most of us would never even, well, all of us, but, you know, most people would only ever be able to dream about doing. There's something a little more relatable about the sort of dogged, hardworking midfielder. That doesn't mean we could actually do what they do, obviously, but it's slightly more relatable. And I think that's why it appeals so much to fans. I also love how the injustice is still rankling and is still going on there. I think that's great. Because that keeps his story at the sort of heart of Swindon Town and their legacy over the years as well, and his own legacy. I think that's good. I don't think that you should ever let go of that.
No,
it's perfect.
We never will, I'll tell you. There's also another thing that there's a bit of a feud between Swindon and Gillingham, and nobody's really understood it, but Ray McHale was involved in that. And nobody really knows what the origin of it was. It revolves around some sort of tackle, but that feud has been sort of going on every year, over years. So it all goes back to those days. If you ask a Gillingham fan where it all started, they will say Ray McHale. You know, it's just an extraordinary thing. Nobody can.
It's the stuff of legend, isn't it? It becomes a club hero like that, doesn't it? If you kick off a grudge with another club who seemingly, why on earth we'd have a grudge with Gillingham? It's not just next door or anything, is it?
But it's not your local derby, is it? It's bonkers. I mean, I to this day, I don't understand it personally, but yeah, it just ran on and on and on, and it's still there. It's still in the background. It's crazy.
And it just makes him all the more yours, doesn't it, when something like that happens, and it's like he's defending Swindon, and it's becoming this thing that's still a generation later or whatever, it's still an issue between Gillingham and Swindon. It's perfect. That's the stuff that club heroes are made of. Absolutely.
Given your sort of comments there, Paul Bradshaw, I won't mention to you that my wife's a Wolves fan. She's sitting not too far away from me, and he's probably grimacing me even as we speak. But let's move on swiftly from that. It's interesting that, you know, we talk about players like Ryan McHale, who've got and Aidan sort of got alluded to this, they have almost like a kinship with the fans. You know, a fan can identify with a guy like Ryan McHale, where perhaps somebody like Ozzy Ardiles or Glenn Hoddle seem like otherworldly personalities. And, you know, is that sort of thing important for a fan, do you think, Vic?
Yeah, I do. I've no problem with Wolves at all, seriously, apart from that one game. And one of my great heroes is Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin, who's a big Wolves fan. So I'll put that one in. The thing is with it, the likes of Hoddle, sometimes when you watch Hoddle play for Swindon, you thought, what on earth is this? How is this happening? whereas the likes of Ray McHale, with all due respect, you can understand why that's happening. But, you know, I just remember the day Ozzy Ardiles joined as manager, and I was interviewing him, and I was thinking, this is Ozzy. I watched him on a grainy black and white TV in the 78 World Cup, and here he is at Swindon. What's that about? You know? So it is incredible, really, that we've had some of these fantastic names. Has Ardiles played a lot of games in midfield? There's no question he'd have been up there, because anybody who's watched him play for Argentina or indeed Tottenham over the years would know that he's just a perfect midfielder, isn't he? He sits in that centre circle, and he takes play, little short passes, wonderful player. So I wish he could have played for Swindon a bit more. But what a bonkers list of names we've had. Sometimes you can't believe it. We had Steve McMahon, of course, as manager for a while too. Great Liverpool hero. Led them to the third division championship. Didn't end well, but that's another story. So, yeah, some of the names are incredible, really.
Yeah, okay, well, we're going to put all those stellar names to one side, and we're going to go with Ray McHale for the midfielder's position on Swindon Town's Mount Rushmore. So moving further forward now, we're into the forwards, and before we come on, I was mentioning to Vic that I've got some friends who live in the same Spanish town as I do, and they're Swindon, well, they come from Swindon, and are massive Swindon Town fans. And there was one name when I mentioned that we were going through, the forward's got to be this guy, and actually it isn't. So aside from this guy who isn't, and Vic's going to give you sort of tell us a little bit, this guy who's might be one of the most famous Swindon non-sort of World Cup players in their sort of in semi-recent history, and the other guys he didn't pick. So up to you, Vic, and you've got to justify this for my friend who's going to be listening to this, so you need to justify it well, buddy.
Yeah, I've got to justify it to myself, really, because the more I think about it, the more ridiculous it is. Don Rogers, of course, you're referring to, who never ran, he glided. He was a magnificent footballer. And as I said, in that League Cup final of 69, on a mud bath of his pitch, the all-white kit was pristine at the end of it. And you'll know when he went round Bob Wilson for that third goal, it was the only white thing in the whole place because everything else was just covered in mud. It was extraordinary. No, wonderful footballer. And I was privileged to see him play many, many times. And what a great player. And I've got to know him in recent years as well. And I actually played football with him once in a charity game at Marlborough, and I put him through and he didn't score. And then I thought, no, he's had three artificial hips, so I'll let him off. So, to share the same dressing room as Don Rogers is kind of like, oh, it's Don Rogers over there. I can't talk. A bit like that, really. I've not chosen him as a striker because he was a winger. So that's my only get out. Is that allowable? Can I?
I mean, basically, it's your choice. So, I mean, you don't have to justify it, but I mean, obviously, it's a forward. And if you classify a forward the winger or the midfield, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's your choice. And as I said, you know, a lot of people who were talking about Swindon Town, well, Don Rogers, but, you know, who else came close? Before we talk about you, the guy you did go for, tell us who else came close, because there again, there's been some decent names, and you mentioned one earlier, Alan Myers, who actually came to play for my club afterwards. And
was, yeah, he did. Yeah,
a lot of goals for us as well. So, and he had a great partner as being Andy Rowland as well. So who else came close aside from Don Rogers?
Well, those two, of course, Amazing Rowland. They were also part of that Legends evening. It was great to have them along. Peter Risto, who was signed for Wolves, strangely, for £80,000. He came on loan initially and made a great impression. And we stumped up £80,000 in March in the last transfer deadline. I can't remember exact year. I think it was 73, 74. But a lot of money in those days. He went on to have a fantastic career with QPR and Everton as well. Wonderful footballer and scored bags and bags of goals. 2 goals on his debut against Carlisle. Yeah, he'd be really, really well up there. Jan Agerfjordtoft, of course, who played for us in the Premier League. Now, quite a big cheese on sort of European football television. There's a lot of interviews. Didn't score a bean before Christmas in the Premier League. Got a goal and then never stopped scoring. And he scored one of the most beautiful goals I've ever seen, actually, against Millwall in the League Cup. Got it on the edge of the far, the near corner of the box, a turn, and then curled it beautifully into the top right-hand corner. And you just think, that is a goal. So he would certainly be up there with his airplane celebration. Went on to Barnsley, into Sheffield United, into Middlesbrough. Duncan Shearer. Now, there's a story. The great Duncan Shearer had got 30 goals in one season. And we were heading for the playoffs. And Blackburn, who'd just come into money through Jack Walker, signed him specifically to stop Swindon getting into the playoffs. Because he scored on his debut for Blackburn and then never kicked a ball again, it seems. So he was the original Blackburn Shearer. And that, again, is another of those moments when you look back on Swindon's history and said, why did you do that? And they did it specifically to stop Swindon getting into the playoffs. But he was a fabulous footballer, Duncan Shearer.
Interesting. I mean, just on Duncan Shearer, isn't it? It's a fascinating issue that you just mentioned there. Aidan, do you think Newcastle signed the wrong Shearer?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as that, no. But that's a lovely story. I didn't know that detail about it. I do know about Duncan Shearer as a player and what he achieved and what he did. You know, fine for the level. I think Newcastle United at that time might have been a step too far, Gary. And clearly Blackburn Rovers was a step too far. But, you know, if Vic's right about the reasons, and I've absolutely no reason to doubt him, it can't just be entirely Swindon bitterness. Well, I'm sure there's a lot to it.
Duncan himself would just say it. I mean, I've spoken to Duncan about it, and he was quite bitter about the whole thing, you know, because...
Yeah, and it's not a good career move for him, was it?
No.
So, yeah, exactly. It didn't help Swindon. It didn't help him. So who did it help? Well, it helped them stop Swindon. You should have the grudge alongside Gillingham on your list. Blackburn Rovers should be right up there. And Wolves, obviously.
It's getting quite long, isn't it, that list?
Yeah. Money corrupts in football.
Yeah.
Well, nothing new, is it, really? It's nothing new, is it? One name I noticed when I was going through a little bit of research this morning was Jimmy Quinn.
Yeah, great Jimmy Quinn, yeah. Northern Lions record goal scorer. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, wonderful player. And, I did a podcast with him a few weeks ago. My goodness me, what some stories he's got to tell, I can tell you. Yeah, wonderful footballer. He went on to Blackburn as well, strangely enough. There's quite a connection between us and Blackburn in many ways. But yeah, he would definitely be up there without any question.
One more name I'm going to throw at you, Mike Summerby.
Mike Summerby. He started his career at Swindon, of course, before going on to Man City, as did his son, Nicky. So they both went on to fame and fortune with Manchester City later on in their career. Yeah.
I mean, the forwards, are very sort of, we're discussing there, very sort of similar to the previous categories, in as much as, my word, there's been some famous names playing in Swindon colours in the past. So who's the forward that you have chosen there, Vic?
Well, his name is Steve Chalky White. Now, I maintain this is the biggest transfer bargain in history because he cost nothing. He was a free transfer and Lou Macari brought him in and Chalky would score goals for fun. He was famous for having his shorts pulled up quite high and for getting offside a lot. But he could score a lot of goals, did Chalk. He got two goals against Gillingham in the playoff semi-final, 86-87 at Selhurst Park. There's another Gillingham connection for you. And yeah, wonderful player. And with Duncan Shearer, had one of the great striking partnerships in the club's history. And I remember going to Newcastle, strangely enough, one balmy Tuesday evening, and they had a partnership with Mickey Quinn and another player whose name I've forgotten. But between those four...
Probably Gavin Peacock at the time,
might have been.
Possibly.
But they'd had those four players between them had scored 100 goals that season. And I said at the start of the commentary, there's no way this is going to be 0-0. Guess what?
Oh, it'd be Mark McGee, sorry. It'd be Mark McGee. There, yeah. It was Mickey Quinn, wasn't it?
Yeah. Guess what? It was 0-0, obviously.
Classic. Absolute classic. Coming to you then, Aidan. Mark McGee, Mickey Quinn, or Steve White? Who would you take?
Oh, Mickey Quinn was a legend, you know. A full-sized legend as well. So, no, we couldn't possibly change that. But Steve White, he sounds like Pippo Inzaghi of another era, doesn't he? You know, it's always offside. And yet still gets all the goals and nobody quite works out how. It's a great talent to have. Everything I've read about him in the lead up to this was describing just his shorts was mentioned everywhere, absolutely everywhere. His sharpened elbows, which he obviously used to force his way back onside or offside in the first place. And the lethal partnership he had with Duncan Shearer. So I think the two go hand in hand to some extent. But possibly what elevates Steve White is, you know, significant moments. There's the obviously he played in the playoff win over Sunderland, but he also came off the bench in the epic against Leicester, was it? When Swindon did go up, won the penalty, which Bowden obviously converted, and that was part of helping Swindon up there. So I think those key moments, as well as the stuff of legend that obviously the player had been there for quite a while, just adds to it. You know, maybe that's what elevates him above Duncan Shearer, and he wasn't unfortunately stolen away either in quite the same circumstance. But yeah, he seems to be the type of player who's held in such affection. And obviously, we've mentioned several on this tonight, but I think it's those characteristics that personal ones and playing ones that make him a little relatable in some ways. And that's what gains that bond. And such bonds like that, once established, don't break very easily. And to then enhance it with key moments and so on just makes it all the better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Davey, I mean, we've got a player who gets offside a lot of times and but he tends not to score goals as well. I mean, Timo Werner's probably more in offside more times than any other forward in the Premier League.
I think we owed our League Cup final success earlier in the season to the amount of times that he and Lukaku drifted offside. So yeah, there's a certain artwork to it. There's an art form to the system. But yeah, Swindon have just been blessed. I think we've done a lot of these podcasts with kind of like what you know we shouldn't refer to as lesser teams. But we've often kind of like said that they've been quite spoilt in one department or another. And you often kind of like see a set of players and because there was one club we did a few weeks ago where they were blessed within, I think, the defensive department. But then there wasn't much way in choice as far as kind of like rivals for who was selected for other positions. But when you look across Swindon's kind of like list of players, it's incredible, really. You know, a vast array of goalkeepers that could have been picked from, defenders galore that could have been picked from, midfielders and strikers are no different, you know, from everyone that's been mentioned here. You know, I'd throw in Paul Wright out, I'd throw in Dave Bamber. And then when I've come to do a bit of research for it, it's some high-scoring players way back in the history that you know, absolutely incredible. It's the longevity and... What's quite striking is kind of like Swindon are appearing like a club that people want to stick around and spend a good majority of their career, certainly across the years. And, you know, for Steve White to come out on top of, you know, a list of players who have, you know, three figures to the name and you know, vast amounts of goals scored is testament to his endurance with the club. And what he helped, I mean, Duncan Shearer was the one that really stood out to me. You know, I'd say go back to that team of the 80s, Duncan Shearer and Jimmy Quinn. You know, if I was thinking asked to think of a Swindon striker, I would automatically recall go to Duncan Shearer because he was just so synonymous with scoring goals in Swindon shirt. You know, so for Steve White to come out on top of this is, you know, absolute testament to the service he gave the club.
Yeah, actually, Duncan Shearer is a bit like Jan Agafjortov. He couldn't score. And when he signed, he scored loads of goals in pre-seasons and then couldn't score for 3-4 months. And then when he did score, off he went. You know, he never stopped after that. So it's pretty similar to Jan Agafjortov, but a fabulous player. Yeah, wonderful. Another one I suddenly remembered, of course, we had the great Mark Waters here at Swindon for a little while. I mean, what a footballer he was. You know, again, you're looking at him thinking, boy, this bloke's played for Villa and Liverpool. He's at Swindon again. What on earth's going on? But what a fabulous player he was. And actually, I think, Stephen, you mentioned that friendly that you went to with Liverpool. Bobby Firmino's first game, I think, for Liverpool.
Yes, it was
that very end. And I think he scored in it, if I remember rightly. So,
I think alongside someone, was it someone like Shea Ojo as well? But yeah, I think it was one of the big pulling points. You know, A, to go to a ground that I've not been to before, but B, also to climb out of the beer gardens of a nice summer to go to Swindon.
I remember it well. And there were a lot of people that I saw there the first time and never seen since, strangely enough.
Okay, so we're going to go with Steve White on the forward and complete the set on Mount Rushmore. And the question we always ask our guests at the end of the podcast is, so who would you pick as Mr. Swindon Town? Well, in this case, Mr. Swindon Town. It can be one of the players you've picked already, or it could be somebody else. It doesn't really matter. It's your choice entirely. And I always like to throw this in without giving people much time to think about it. So it tends to be a bit of an instinctive decision rather than a well-considered one, shall we say. But if I said to you, Vic, who would you consider to be Mr. Swindon Town?
Well, we've mentioned him already, and his name's John Trollope. There's no question about it because, you know, a wonderful footballer ahead of his time, as I've said, a proper gentleman. And actually, I brought the, I don't know if you can see this, Swindon Town A to Z up with me, and there he is. And there's Sir Don there as well with his white shorts. Look, can you mention, look, there's no dirt on there at all. So, yeah, John Trollope, without question. Record-breaking number of appearances, as fit as a flea, just a wonderful player. So, yeah, without question, it's John Trollope, yeah.
Stevie, is that a good choice, matey? I mean, we've got some famous names, and we've big selected, perhaps less famous names, but it's important sometimes that when you pick the guy to represent from all the players who represent your club, that you pick a player that's given his all for the club.
Oh, totally. You know, 20 years at the club, nearly 900 appearances. You know, it's similar to kind of like at Liverpool. You know, we've had so many, you know, brilliant players over the years, you know, majestic and talented, high scorers, wonderful defenders, goalkeepers, the lot. You know, people will still turn around to Ian Callaghan with his 888 appearances and hold him up as Mr. Liverpool, you know. And, you know, you can't give that kind of service to a club and then be kind of like usurped by anyone else, really, to be, you know, that player that just totally encapsulates a club.
Yeah. Aidan, I suppose with some stellar names there, sometimes it'd be easy to sort of go for the big name guy. But I think most fans would probably agree with what Vic and Stevie said there.
Yeah, I reckon so. But just to be contrary, just for the sheer hell of it.
Go for it. Go for it.
Because that's what I'm here to do. No, I agree with all the reasoning. But, you know, if I was to pick one of the four that we have carved away, I would pick the goalkeeper who was the hero of Swindon's biggest ever achievement. That's, you know, not to say that someone else, as you've talked about there, is the one who resonates as Mr. Swindon. I understand all that. So I'm just offering an alternative view based on the four that we've had of who I think has made the biggest impact, I guess, on Swindon as a club and its achievements.
I think it's also worth mentioning that John was not only a player there, he was also youth team manager, assistant manager, first team manager, you name it, scout. He's done the lot. So I think that goes into the melting pot as well, really.
Yeah. It's interesting when we first sort of had Swindon mentioned as the club we're going to discuss. I mean, I have a sort of vivid memory of the League Cup final against Arsenal. And as Vic described earlier, John Rogers scoring the third goal. And I remember one of those sort of moments of commentary that sticks in your mind forever is when he put the ball in the net. And I mean, Swindon had played really well. I think Arsenal equalised in the last minute or certainly late in the game and it went to extra time. Then John Rogers scored the last goal. And David Coleman says he scored, and that is that. Right? It's one of those things that sticks in my mind. I mean, Vicky, that must be a great memory for Swindon Town fans.
It was magnificent. You mentioned the Bobby Gould equaliser. Why did you mention the Bobby Gould? Anyway, it was a terrible, terrible moment. But the Rogers' first goal, if you look at it closely, it's inside the six-yard box, and he shifts it. He moves the ball so that then he can put it into the back of the net. It's a wonderful piece of skill. And I think sometimes because it's a bit of a melee, people don't notice that bit of skill. But that third one, he's just onside when the ball's played through the middle. He sprints away. He sends Bob Wilson off to do some shopping. And then he slots it into the back of the net. It is it's pure poetry. And I think I was sort of level with the corner flag. And I can see it now. You know, I can see him coming towards Bobby Gould now, Bob Wilson now, and then slotting it into the corner. And we just knew then that was the moment, you know, that we'd actually won the League Cup. And it's, you just sit standing there thinking, we want, the trouble is, you see, when you're a lot younger, as I was then, you're thinking, this is great. You know, we won the League Cup. Next year, we'll win the FA Cup. The year after that, we'll win the league. You know, it goes on and on and on. Actually, that side did go on to win European Cups in terms of the Anglo-Italian Cup and the League Cup Winners' Cup. So, you know, they beat the likes of Juventus and Napoli and Roma. They won away at Juventus. They won away at Roma. Can you believe it? You know, these are European powerhouses and we'd beaten them and beat Napoli 3-0 in the final. And they had to abandon the final because the Napoli fans were rioting because they didn't like the score. So extraordinary. That period in our history was monumental. And when you think that you beat Juventus at the County Ground 4-0, 4-0, can you believe it? Incredible. Amazing.
Not only did you beat teams like Juventus, Napoli and Lazio, but a few weeks after you won the League Cup, you came to Spellers Park and beat Warsaw as well. So, I mean, you know, that's marginally impressive.
That's up there. Yeah.
So, that was Swindon Town, and the Mount Rushmore for Swindon Town is Peter Downsborough, Colin Calderwood, Ryan McHale and Steve White. And our friend John Torlop has been nominated as Mr. Swindon Town, and who's going to argue with that? Aidan, enjoyed it, buddy?
Oh, absolutely, of course. Loving this series, loving delving into clubs that I don't know so much about. It's always great with the, you know, the person with the interest and the knowledge coming on, and as well as the little bits of research we have to do into it to add to the bits I already did know about Swindon. I don't want to be painting myself out as not knowing anything about them at all. There are definitely periods where they resonated quite a lot with me. Particularly those in the early 90s. And I think they were a very stylish team at that time, obviously in Glenn Hoddle's image. And, you know, that sort of marked them out as a club to pay a bit of interest in at that point. So, yeah, absolutely loved it. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed finding out more about some of the great characters as well. Loved it.
So, you think, obviously, we've discussed some stellar names, but it's fascinating that, you know, yet again, when we're talking about one of the perhaps less celebrated clubs, that it's the unknown names that resonate most with the fans.
Yes, I think the great thing about this podcast is that I think we, you know, as football lovers, we like to think we know a little bit about each club, but all we really know is kind of like the front cover of the book, you know, and this gives us a chance to kind of like, you know, flick through the pages and find out more, you know, whatever we know, we only scratch the surface really, unless we've previously gone in depth to them on something we've written or a podcast we've done. And, you know, it's just wonderful to I know, soak in that knowledge that the guests bring, and Vic's been brilliant, you know, and nailed it absolutely tonight.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So massive thanks, Vic, for coming on and talking about Swindon Town and allowing us to sort of share your passion for the club and these names, the players, and, you know, their histories and other players as well. So thanks for coming on. I hope you've enjoyed it, Vic.
I've loved it. Thank you very much indeed. I just hope there's another chapter to be written at Wembley in a few weeks' time. If we manage to get there, that would be amazing to finish off an extraordinary season. And I think you could put Clem Morfouni up there as a Swindon legend now, bearing in mind that he has taken over the club and led us into possibly the playoffs after a disastrous pre-season last year. So let's hope there's another chapter to be written in a few weeks' time.
Football book never closes, Vic, so there was another chapter to go.
Yeah, definitely.
So finally, massive thanks to anybody listening in for sharing the big Swindon Town thoughts and the Mount Rushmore monument that's going to be sort of established above the club's ground. And catch us next time on Mount Rushmore and the LOB podcast from Thieves Football Times.
Many thanks for joining us today on the LOB, a Thieves Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.